just drinking it, eating pizza, and talking with your friends.
We're okay. Just talking about languages and Indonesian language and how it's basically a pidgin version of a whole bunch of different
the national language.
The national
right.
language.
Yes.
Yeah. And
well, Indonesian is like 3,000 islands or something like that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you can imagine how there's a bunch of different dialects. It's very spotty, the nation as a whole. So
yeah. So the country came together and sort of made this sort of simplified pidgin version of the, which is kind of a somewhere in between of all the national dialects so that people could communicate with each other.
That's and they do.
Yeah, exactly. But it also means that if you go there and you decide you want to learn a local language, you can do so pretty quickly. It's apparently very simple to learn.
Now, I cut you guys off when you were talking about the metal band, so please continue your conversation.
Oh, I was just saying that. I mean, metal's not something that I'm in the mood for very often. I'm just not young and supple and rebellious anymore. So it's rare that I'm in the mood for metal. But when I am in the mood for metal, that band cannot be beat.
That was a good band. I mean, all the Swedish metal I've ever heard is screamy, scratchy death.
Yeah.
Black metal. And, you know, hearing something a little melodic is nice. I had a little bit of metal in my teenage years and whatnot. Yeah. Helmet was my, you know, the band that I related to the most. You know, I saw them in concert twice.
Yeah.
You know, I just liked the music from Helmet, you know.
I liked them too, yeah.
And so that would have to be my favorite, you know, metal-y band.
These guys are, the interesting thing about this band, that song that you listen to, let me point out, is probably their heaviest song. They do ballads, they do slower songs. What they are the full-on geeks, the 20-sided die of metal bands. All of their albums are based on some fantasy novel. And for example, they did their most popular album.
The Joko metal.
Their most popular album.
You are shitting me.
The most popular album is based on the, what's the book written by J.R.R. Tolkien that gives all the ancient history?
The Silmarillion?
It's based on the Silmarillion. So people that get their autograph often bring the Silmarillion to have them sign a copy of the Silmarillion. And they're a total like geek metal band, and they're very what would you call it? They're prog metal, which means they're using sort of classical themes in their composition. They're very complicated metal compositions, and their singing is melodic.
I'll give you this: every single punk band, every single all the bands that we know today basically use the same Baroque progression. So
punk does. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why punk got boring and metal got interesting. When I started listening to Beethoven and I started listening to Bach and I started listening to Mozart, punk got boring and metal got interesting.
Right.
Because it all started making sense that it's like, oh, the metalheads are the geeks of hard rock. Uh-huh. And that's why I started falling in love with these guys, is they're really full on.
I mean, Greg's been on this Baroque progression thing for a while, so I've heard that. But I never really equated metal to the Greek composers, but you know, I mean, hearing what I heard just now and thinking about it, and it kind of makes sense where punk is based off of the progression stuff, and then the metal. It sounds such an oxymoron, but the metal could be based off of more symphony type stuff.
So. They really, I mean, these guys are conducting symphonies. Mm-hmm. They're getting into like full on symphony production that is using full orchestras. That's their geekness. They're geeks.
Yeah.
Music geeks with incredible knowledge of how to compose complex full symphonies. And so I think that that's where once you start getting into sort of the wider realms of music like that, when I started really getting into jazz and I started really getting into classical music, that's when I started getting into metal.
Meanwhile, compare Papa Bell's Canon in D to Green Day's Basket Case, and you'll find they are almost exactly the same.
Yeah, except Green Day's Basket Case is perhaps a little bit more melodic.
It sold more records, too.
Papa Bell's Canon in D is a horrible song.
I really don't like Canon in D. yes. We can move on from there. Yeah.
That was like the album my senior year, Green Day.
Yeah, Dookie.
Dookie. And
there's a comedy video on YouTube of a guy that shows you how many songs are based on Pachelbel, Canon, and D, and he sings like 30 or 40 popular pop
songs.
That's
the one you showed me, right?
Yeah.
No, when I showed you Axis of Awesomes, which is their four-chord song, but that's a little bit different. But yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. It's interesting because they are all Canon and D.
Yeah.
The one he showed me was like crazy. It's like all the pop songs of the last 20 years. Like, it just...
we'll listen to it on the way home. I'll play it for you. All right. Yeah, I want to get into Amazon Anonymous, so that's why I wanted to break out.
Amazon Anonymous.
Somebody bought something really cool, and you're probably going to pick it. So,
is that a dildo?
Maybe.
So far, only I've bought the sex stuff on Amazon.
Well, that's what I was thinking about.
Yeah, no, we did catch some sex stuff, but it was Jeff.
Well, there was those cock rings that wasn't me. The cock rings.
The cock rings? Cock ring warehouse?
That was not me.
I don't believe you. There's some interesting stuff here. You can take a look, Shane, if you'd like to find something you'd like to do.
That's a bit far.
So what's the search period?
No, I trust your judgment. You go ahead.
I did June 15th to today.
Okay.
That seems like enough time. Here you go, Shane. Just take a look and see.
So, if you bought something after June 15th, drum roll, please. You might become not very famous, anonymously famous.
And I just pick something here, huh?
Yeah.
Something you find interesting.
Something you find interesting.
Oh, there's really not. Okay.
It all sucks. You guys buy boring fucking shit.
Boring stuff.
All right, I've definitely got one here.
Why don't one of you go? I'm still looking through these.
Okay, go for it, Shane. Pick it up.
I'm going to have to go with Tree of Souls, the Mythology of Judaism.
Hmm.
That's an obvious winner right there.
All right. Why don't you look at the description, see what it says. Tree of Souls. I mean, if someone is you know, trying to understand the mythology or as a mythology course or whatever, I can totally understand why they would want something like that.
No, that'd be
there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in these religions. I mean, if you ask me, it's all batshit insane, but that doesn't mean
it's not fun.
Doesn't mean it's not interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, the Greek and Roman gods are batshit insane, but they're fun.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. The first anthology of Jewish mythology in English, Tree of Souls, reveals a mythical tradition as rich and as fascinating as any in the world. Drawing from the Bible, the Pseudepigrapha, the Talmud, and the Midrash. I should stop reading before I start to embarrass myself anymore.
Well, you're used to reading in Japanese, so it's okay.
And you really should read that right to left.
Oh shit, that's why it sounded so nice. This looks awesome. I would read that.
Yeah, it does sound like an interesting book.
I don't think I'm going to pick what you expect me to pick, because I don't really see anything that is like, oh, Jeff's going to pick that. So go ahead, Greg. What did you like?
Let me switch to the orders report because there's a little bit more stuff on here. No, I think I'll still pick this. The Delta 9192T-SSSD-DSD Addison single handle pull down kitchen faucet with Touch 2.0 technology.
Touch
2.0 technology. You need
fucking batteries for
that
your...
That thing is definitely X-rated.
You need fucking batteries to work your faucet.
It's got... No. You don't, because it's Touch 2.0.
No.
No.
It's electronic. You need...
I'm looking at that shit.
No. This is Touch 2.0 technology.
Oh, okay.
Look at the clitoris tickler there. Like, it's coming, man. That thing is X-rated.
That is... Wow. That isn't... It looks like the Jackrabbit.
Oh, come on. You guys must know the best faucets are suggestive. Look... It's Touch 2.0 technology. It works on the magic of water. It has nothing to do with that.
The magic of water.
I thought Touch 2.0 is where you touch it like a touch lamp and it turns on and off.
That's what,
But no, it needs electricity.
Of course it does. Okay. I'm joking. Of course it needs electricity.
Electricity to vibrate.
No, it's touched.
It vibrates the water out.
Yeah, there is a part you go and you stick it up your pooter. But that's an extra option.
Does your wife like washing the dishes? She will now.
So whoever bought this, thank you, because that was nearly a $300 item.
Yeah, no, we get good money for it. But still, I mean, it looks pretty cool. It's
admittedly, yeah, I'd have that.
That'd be
kitchen.
An awesome thing to have in your
kitchen. I mean, it's great for anti, not spreading bacteria, right? You got E. coli on your fingers. You need to wash your hands. You just touch the back of your elbow to the thing and the water turns on.
Yeah.
Unless your batteries are dead.
And
it comes with a soap dispenser.
It's got a beautiful, elegant curve that you can jerk off to. So,
that is
I don't know if I go that far.
That's the French tickler.
Hey, it's each his own.
It's right there.
It also has a soap dispenser.
It does.
All right. I am going to go with Baby Minds. Brain building games your baby will love paperback.
Baby Minds.
$12.81.
Do they know that babies can't read?
They know that mixing baby and minds, not minds. Baby minds.
Hey.
Boom!
That's just
don't
wrong.
Let your babies play Minesweeper. That's
more than 65 delightful games and activities to jumpstart your baby's amazing brain power. Can simply singing a song or blowing a dandelion under a toddler's nose help her mind blossom? Can a baby count, remember events, and solve problems even before he can talk? The exciting answer to both questions is yes. Both. Wasn't it like 7 questions?
So that means I can blame my parents for my poor problem-solving
breakthrough
abilities.
Breakthrough research in revealing the extraordinary inborn abilities of infants. It is also showing how experiences during the first years of life profoundly influence intelligence, creativity,
this baby
language,
teeth,
development,
a toddler,
and
not a
even
baby.
Later, remaining reading and math skills. Remaining mouse skills, because I never got reading skills because I didn't have this fucking book.
No.
So I wanted to see what the reviews were for this. I think it's 4 out of 5 stars, 49 customer reviews. Now, I kind of buy a little bit of what that said about doing things before they can talk. Shane, I don't know if you follow the show close enough to know this, but for Allison, we were watching videos about infant sign language.
And oh, I forgot about this, yeah.
There was probably, Allison probably had a vocabulary of 30 things before she could verbalize anything and verbalize the stuff. So she could tell us if she wanted a drink, if she wanted, you know.
Yeah, I've heard about this, yeah.
So I am all about infant sign language.
Yeah.
So this, you know, this
it
part
would
of
be nice to know why they're crying sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does it make them more intelligent though? I mean, do you think it has like a, it would be nice.
It
as a
makes
parent.
Them, it definitely makes them less frustrated.
Right. But how much do you think it really affects their overall trajectory of development as an adult? You know, I mean, like,
you know,
I don't know if we have enough information to
my
say.
My reply
it's
does it.
To say,
my reply
it's
does.
Supposition,
it
but.
Doesn't matter much because, yeah. When you're a parent in the trenches, how old are your kids?
6.5 and 2.5.
Okay. So you're beyond the sign language thing.
Yeah. Well, the 2.5 ones,
Max, my son, who's he's 2.5 also,
yeah.
Didn't get into the sign language as much, but as you probably seen, your younger kid learned so much from your older kid. He's talking earlier. Maybe not.
Yeah. Kind of. Maybe. Yeah.
You know, and also using the older kid as a conduit to relay what he needs.
Is that true?
Did you see that at all? Because I saw that with Max. I saw he didn't have to communicate to us.
I think that
Allison would tell us what Max wanted.
I think that my situation is really complicated just because
Allison's
of
a lot closer. Allison's not 4 years. She's only two years.
Maybe.
Right? Yeah.
I speak English to my kids. My wife speaks Japanese to them, and my daughter speaks both pretty much. And I've begged my daughter to only speak English to him because I'm never there. She got English from school. So I begged her to speak English to my son. And I think for him, he knows there's two languages. He knows that he has to use two different words for things depending on whether he's talking to me or his mother. But because of that, I think he tends to just kind of point to things and signal, because mm-hmm. he doesn't really know oftentimes. Sometimes he doesn't seem to really know who is going to understand what. He's right. still really sort of lost in that sort of hazy shade of cloud there as to okay. what language he should use for what. But yeah,
it's definitely a different situation. And I'm not saying that Max's experience was typical, but for me, he didn't sit in front. It was amazing, the sign language videos. We found a certain kind, and they're not the baby Einsteins. They're not the big label brands. They were this more home produced version of it. And Allison, at the time when she was, less a year and a half old or something like that, she wouldn't have attention span more than a minute and a half for anything.
Right.
And she would, the first time she watched this video, she watched it for over 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And that grew to 20 minutes, and she really liked these sign language videos. They were just really well done. And like I said, before she could verbalize things, she had a vocabulary of at least 30 things. And it reduced her frustration level. It helped us.
And this was about what age?
Under two.
So that's amazing. My son's so confused. He hasn't really been mm-hmm. still at 2.5. He can't communicate really.
Does she still use any of the sign language?
Sign language? No. No, most of it went away. I should quiz her to see what she remembers.
She can talk to you now, right?
Yeah.
Allison's
she's fully
5 years old now.
Yeah. Oh, she's 5. Okay.
Yeah, she's 5. Max is 2. And he's, he's communicating verbally. He's almost 3. Communicating verbally fine. But yeah, I mean, she pretty much gave up the sign language. I'm going to have to quiz her and see what she remembers. The thing with infant sign language, for the people listening, since Shane's beyond that, is you just can't throw them in front of the TV. You have to do it with them, practice them. Because
it's
like a dog.
So, they show the adult doing the sign language. They show the child doing the sign language.
Yeah.
The adult has to learn that this clumsy movement is the sign, right, from the infant. And then you have to learn how your child is doing the even clumsier movement, there's that too. There's that big learning for the adult too. And, I'm a huge proponent of infant sign language.
That's really cool, yeah. I wish we had done something like that.
I don't know really how we came across it. I can't remember, but people with kids, I really suggest it.
But it worked. It worked for Allison, but not as much for Max. But you didn't need it as much.
He used Allison to communicate for him.
I'm sorry to change subject. Can I ask you? Did your kids ever use like gibberish words that they made up for a long period of time? The reason I ask is my son, he doesn't speak English, or the majority of the words that come out of his mouth, even at 2.5 now, are not English or Japanese. They are words that he made up. But he uses them consistently, and we've learned them. And so there's this his whole language of his own. Like manya is water. That's not English or Japanese. It's just that's his word for water. And he has got all these words that mean things.
It's based off of what? French for eat, right?
So right.
Putting it in your mouth. He's speaking French on you.
It's weird, but he's got all these words that mean something, but none of them are either things that he's learned from us. We've all learned them from him.
I mean, I've heard about twins making up their own gibberish words, right? And communicating back and forth. I haven't heard, and I can't think of an example. I mean, Allison at 5... We actually took her to a speech therapist recently because we were worried about she wasn't developing properly. Because she says, instead of gymnastics, she says gnastics. And instead of pretend, she says tend. And
that's just cute.
It's cute. Horrible. But
it's cute when she's 5.
You want to make sure that it's normal at 5.
Yeah.
You don't want to make sure. Instead of something else, it's something else.
Yeah. Right.
And she's just about kicked the something else part. But,
I told you about
I mean, I still say like that's, what is it? It's not coming to mind. I lost it. It's really funny, sort of. Not irrelevant. What is it?
Irregardless.
Irregardless. I love that word. Irregardless. Oh, irregardless.
Is technically a word. I can't really answer.
What is technically a word now?
Oh yeah, yeah. Language evolves. You see.
So, irregardless of
enough now, people yeah. use it wrong, it becomes a word.
And you can try, but you can't stop change. Change happens, things evolve.
That's the fundamental
property of the universe, and irregardless,
we have to let it go.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I don't want to sound like I'm, isolating your kids or anything, but I can't think of anything my kids have made up that's stuck.
Well, I can think of something similar. My nephew, Jesse, he for a while, when he was about two, he wouldn't say yes. He'd say no, fine, but instead of saying yes, he'd say, Shane is showing Jeff a picture.
I think CBR guest isn't working properly, right? So,
so he would say, instead of yes. And it was a cute, very cute thing, yeah. But obviously it didn't, actually, my sister and brother-in-law were kind of like cool with it, but the nanny that you know, because they both work, so they have to give her to somebody. They both gave it to her. You know, she was not happy with it, and so eventually Jesse started going, yeah. And so, but now he doesn't use it. But it was cute for a time when he would just say, for yes. Do you want your milk? It was or no.
I think there's a cap on the bottom to cover up the butt. It's like a fire control cap.
So
talking about the song Screwdriver.
Okay, numbers as colors. Now, I thought there was a different term for it, but no, it's just a type of synesthesia.
Synesthesia.
Yeah. That's when you have different senses, your senses kind of merge in a way. It's actually something.
Does anyone want more beer?
No.
No.
Oh no! No.
Would you like another beer?
I would. Yes.
Okay.
if you're not going to have any of it with me, then I'll turn it down.
No, I'll have some beer. Okay. I have to walk up two flights of stairs and go to bed.
Then yes, I would.
It's enjoy easy some for me. Beer.
I have to drive, so no.
Yes, Greg has to drive, so no.
Synesthesia. We've talked about it before. Are you still recording, Jeff?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's similar to what you and I have certainly both experienced on certain mind altering drugs, where you taste colors or you feel flavors or something along those lines. You get those wires crossed. And there are people who naturally have this thing where they see numbers as colors or shapes or something along that line.
Right.
So it's a sort of melding of these two sort of abstract. One is, well, they're both kind of abstract, actually.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. I can see that happening. I have,
I mean, what's weird is that we have this whole thing where we perceive the world in this really different way that we don't really acknowledge, right? Because there are these five classical senses, but there are a lot more senses than that, than just sight, touch, taste, smell, and sight, touch, taste, smell, and what was the fifth one?
Hearing.
Guess what?
The one that what? The podcast uses?
That's right.
Can you... I need. I'm sorry. It's,
go pee.
Go pee.
It says,
what's the word in Japanese? Or say in Japanese the close to toilet thing.
Toire ga chikai.
He's toire ga chikai.
Toire ga chikai. Which one is? Oh, is that the?
This is the upland.
Yeah. Interesting choice.
Okay, so while he is peeing, is anything here? I don't even. No, what you wrote? Oh, you wrote down Lagunitas, right?
You said save the Lagunitas talk until after.
We were talking about
you were talking about how one of these beers, and I think it was the last one, had kind of a Lagunitas. It was that of the Portland had kind of a Lagunitas taste to it,
right?
And I was explaining the whole Lagunitas
Oh, you wrote that. I didn't prompt you, but you were talking about the whole weed shutdown thing.
Yes, the whole thing. Okay,
we'll save that for Shane, because that's more of a Shane thing. What's going on?
What's going on, Rudy?
Let's see. Anything else interesting about the Homebrewers Conference? I had an awesome falafel. The other big meal I had at that market was cheese. We went to a cheese shop.
Mm-hmm.
We went to two different cheese shops. We bought to the Amish cheese shop and bought this habanero cream cheese thing. Oh my God, was it good for like habanero cream cheese? And we left it in the hotel. Otherwise, I'd have it here now. So mad. But then
I'm sure you can get it interneted.
Yeah, I went to the good cheese shop, had some of the Chimay cheese, and oh, it was so ripe.
Chimay is
so good.
Chimay is, the beer Chimay.
Yeah, no, Chimay.
Yeah, Chimay also has a cheesery.
It's kind of, but this one was ripe.
It's not a cheesery. What's the name of that? It's a...
Damn it. Cheesery.
Sure. It's not cheesery.
It's not cheesery, but I don't know what it's called. But
there's some term.
But this one was, I've had Chimay cheese before, and it's been very firm and crumbly and whatnot. No, this was runny and gooey, and it was lactic, and it was ripe. It was so good. And then the guy...
I'm drool running down my mouth right now as he described
it. The guy working at the booth is like, you know, I got this... You want me to put... You know, would you like my suggestion? I'm like, yeah, sure. He had this English cloth-bound cheddar. And yesterday, the day before we were there, the guy, the cheesemaker from England was there and tried it. And yeah, it was a very... aged, dry, complex cheddar. Delicious stuff.
I've had a cheddar that I really like, to be honest. I'm not a cheddar.
This is a sour beer.
Oh.
Do you want any, Greg?
No.
This is from Upland. We tasted this last week on the show.
It's not a lambic.
No. This is kind of close to a Flanders. So like Rodenbach.
Okay, yeah. Rodenbach, I've had.
Yeah.
So is Rodenbach a red...
It's a Flanders. It's a
Flanders is a red ale. Like, for example, the Ichtehem. Have you ever had Ichtehem?
I don't think so.
It's kind of like the Rodenbach. It's a red ale from a small town in Belgium, I think. It was one of my favorite Belgian beers just because it had... They brewed it in wine casks, in red wine casks, and so it pulled all this sort of dark red grape flavor from the casks.
This tastes really different.
Really?
It smells like wintergreen.
Oh, God. As soon as you said that, all I tasted was bubblegum wintergreen.
It's so different than what I... Or is this not the same? Is this not the Upland? No, it has to be the Upland because there's no label. It's very different.
That's really different. Wow.
Just because of a week that's gone by?
It tastes weedy and it tastes...
I mean, the bottle was not very full, so there was a lot of room for oxidation in a week and whatnot. Change. It's not funky and lactic, and it's wintergreen.
It's good, actually.
Minty.
Tastes good to me.
It's way different from what I expected. I think I can still taste a bit of that sour in the back. But it's really very hidden.
It tastes wintergreen and lagery. It's really...
Yeah.
What? It's like someone... It's like...
You put your lager...
Oh, I...
Is this not...
No, we drank all that.
It's the cat
pee. I threw some of that Brooklyn
here.
I threw it on top of the dregs.
That's so why I would protect sour. Okay.
I threw it on top of the dregs so I'd protect the dregs in case I wanted to pitch this.
Oh.
And now I just drank what I... This is Frankenstein. Don't worry about it. I mean, if you like it, drink it, but...
Tastes all right.
That's right.
I drink... You know what I drink on a normal basis? I drink Keating. I don't know if you've had Keating. Keating's my company. I'm supposed to drink it to promote my company. So.
It's a rice beer. Okay. I mean, you know, like Budweiser. It's made mostly with rice.
It's a little better than Budweiser.
Yeah, but it's...
Actually, though, Keating is actually not rice.
Oh, really?
No, it's 100% hops. Barley. I'm sorry, 100% barley.
It's first time on Craft Beer Radio. Forgive him.
We just did the IPA second thing. Time on Craft Beer Radio. My head's all on the IPA thing. Yeah, anyway, no, yes, it's okay. Apparently, so they tell me it's 100%.
Yeah, so that explains this beer a lot more. After we were done recording last time, I'm like, oh, I wish I had some sour dregs from the McKellar to put on the cherry lambic thing that I'm going to make. I'm like, well, I got the Upland, but we drank every last drop of liquid, but there's still some yeast in the bottom. To protect the yeast, I'm going to throw some of this Brooklyn Express stuff from the Savor beer on there because it was open. So what we're tasting is slightly soured.
I can taste Brooklyn. A little bit of the sour stuff, but it's weighted, and this is from a little.
Probably tiny, not something I'd want to pitch on those cherries anyway.
Well, yeah. Explains why he said that's way different.
Yeah, yeah, I forgot. Well, when you start doing shit when you're drunk, you forget that it happened.
Do you want to talk about the metric system?
Well, let's talk about Metric the Band first.
Yeah, talk about Metric the Band, because
the only reason I brought it up was the song that you chose at the very beginning. I kind of reminded me of them a little bit. I like Metric a bit. I think they have four albums. I think three of them that I actually like. The first one is more closer to that amp thing, the Breeders amp album, which is more organic and not so electronic. And then the other two albums are much more electronic. And I
what's
heard
that song about Drive on 55.
Yeah, yeah, that's it's the amp song, Drive on 55, something like that. Yeah, yeah, I know that song. It's a great song. I like them enough. I just brought it up because that reminded me of it, and I thought that that's something that Greg would probably like, so I asked. Nothing further than that.
Yeah. So the metric system is just me. I don't like people who are metric system bullies.
Why?
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Really. Because the metric system is just as arbitrary as any other system.
But it's... Okay, so it's just as arbitrary as any other system, but at least it's base 10 arbitrary, and it's easier to do.
That's just arbitrary. Base 10 is not easy to do because it's base 10. In fact, base 12 would be easy. Base 12 would be mathematically easier, and every mathematician you ask will tell you this, that base 12 would probably be the easiest system we could use because it's the smallest base, but it's also...
Adding a zero is easier for humans than adding a...
Can I
8.812?
Can I? Stop here a second. One of the tests that I'm going to need to be taking if I ever want to become a full time employee of my company is, requires me to be able to change in and out of bases. So I've been practicing this recently, but it all seems arbitrary to me. So I'd really love to hear why they say that base 12 is for some reason more efficient or is better than base 10. That's very interesting to me.
Here's base 10. How can you, can you divide evenly into base 10? You can divide obviously five one, and right? Two. You can divide two and you can divide five.
Right.
Right. Here's 12. What can you divide? You can divide one. You can divide two. You can divide three. You can divide four. You can divide six.
And so, if then things are base in base,
so you can
12.
make easy fours. You can make easy thirds. You can easily make these.
So why base 12 over binary then?
Well, because binary is, it gets too large.
Okay, sure.
Base 12, it doesn't get ridiculously large while at the same time having a lot more ways to divide.
And well, even that's arbitrary though, because large and small are all relative to what.
You talk about bits of information to do it, right? There's more bits of information in base 2 than there is in base 12 to get the same number, right? Mm-hmm. So base 16, what's that divided into? That's
so 16 has 1, 2, 4 and 8.
I see. Okay, that makes
sense. So I guess, stacking them towards the bottom gives you better granularity, right? Better resolution.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense.
But
I'm sorry, go ahead.
But, okay. So you're arguing metric sucks because it's arbitrary.
No, I'm saying saying metric sucks. I'm saying they're all arbitrary.
But you're talking but what are you going to compare it? You're comparing it against the English system, the imperial system.
Well, I'm saying insisting one over the other when they're both just as arbitrary it shouldn't matter. Let me finish. Look, it doesn't matter because you should use what is culturally acceptable and viable and what's easy for you to use because your culture accepts it, and you only care about it really when it's rocket science. Because then it's rocket science.
No, how many tablespoons are in a pint? How many tablespoons are in a pint, Greg?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Exactly. How many milliliters are in a liter?
1,000.
Exactly.
So
that's, it's not arbitrary. It's about simplicity of use and simplicity of communication. This is, it's like making the Indonesian communicable language that everybody can understand. This is simply a method of communicating an idea that everybody can understand.
But a pint's a pound, a world around.
How many tablespoons or teaspoons are in a pint? How many milliliters, which is close to a teaspoon, are in a liter? It's an even, you don't have to have a whole dictionary of conversions. It's all one thousandths or one hundredths. It's all base 10.
And more importantly, you can communicate them with every other person in the world.
You have 1,000 milliliters or something, I need a third of it.
333 milliliters, 0.333.
Yeah, exactly. It's not so quite exact, and it's hard to get that exactly down.
What the hell? Why the fuck are you talking about exact? You're talking about tablespoons.
It's much easier to measure a third of a cup than it is to measure 333.
Oh, bullshit. For fuck's sake. No, come on now. Bullshit. This is not about getting an exact measurement of flour. This is about communication.
Yeah.
It's about communication.
Right. So you work with what's comfortable. And if you're not going
to... It's not comfortable if you have to translate it.
No one is ever going to say I need to get a pint full of this and all you have is teaspoons.
All right.
That's ridiculous.
No. Stop. You're doing a recipe for... You read a recipe. It says 3 teaspoons of butter.
Let me change directions.
For a normal serving. Right. But no, you're cooking for a picnic and you need to cook for 15 people.
So you multiply that by 15.
Change directions.
And where is your...
The United States is not the center of the world. The economy is global. Yes. You need to be able to communicate with other people in a way that people can understand.
Greg, where's your 45 teaspoon measuring cup?
I'm sure that there is a conversion factor somewhere.
Guess what? If it was a metric, you wouldn't have to look it up.
For this one example,
The one example I've explained so far.
I'm just saying it's just 10 is just as arbitrary. It's not there's no
you're talking about philosophically. I'm talking about culturally, communicably, between cultures, for people to be able to share information, communicate information. That has nothing to do with whether or not this is philosophically arbitrary.
If you're going to make a thing with, and you're going to take 3 tabs of butter and turn it into something, you're just going to make something ridiculous. You have to learn how to scale your recipes better.
I don't know if you cook enough to know that it's
kind of
a terrible point
I made. But I'm
butter a little more, but a little extra, a little less butter is not that big of a difference. Just add more.
Yeah, well, I mean, my point about it is that, you know, if you're cooking and you're scaling recipes just linearly, then you're doing it wrong. But that's a terrible point on my part.
Was a bad point.
I'm not saying it's a good point. I just want to make that clear. Recipes don't necessarily scale linearly, but.
And so what do you want to use the English system for?
Regardless, I accept your point that it is definitely easier to say, you know, to convert milliliters to liters. Sure.
Do you even know how many teaspoons are in a cup?
How many teaspoons in a cup? Let's see. I think that there are...
There's 4 tablespoons in a tablespoon.
There's three teaspoons in a tablespoon.
Oh, is that right?
There's three teaspoons in a tablespoon. There are, I want to say...
Wait a minute. Why are we having this conversation? Who gives a fuck? Why are you using it in the first place? Because we have to think about it. Nobody has to think about it if it's the metric system. And it actually works.
If you're cooking a lot, you know what? You know these things by heart anyway.
It doesn't matter. It's not about that. It's about communication.
Yeah, it is about that because it's about what you use. And it's about what comes naturally to you and how you communicate with the other people.
Tradition is the tether and peg of fools. You're saying stick with tradition.
I'm with him on this. Don't give me some...
Not only am I with him on this, I think that this is very un-Greg. I don't know where this Greg has come from. It sounds like you're getting older, you're becoming more strange and weird in your conservative ways, even though you were always kind of... But you're so afraid of change, you can't even deal with the metric system anymore?
I'm not afraid of change. I embrace change.
A science man can't deal with
change.
What I'm saying
simply is that the metric system is just another round of arbitrary
That's
measurement.
A philosophical argument. Yes, I understand.
Is it better or worse than the imperial system?
It's probably better than the imperial system.
So then why don't we use it?
Why are you arguing against it then?
Because I don't think that...
Is it not worth... I guess the economics don't add up. It's not worth...
Yeah, basically.
Well, okay, that's a different argument. So it's a completely different argument if the economics of getting America on the metric system doesn't add up. And I'm not going to argue the same way against that argument.
And there's a considerable emotional attachment when there shouldn't be. There's...
Wait, you're bitching about the metric system and you're saying emotional attachment. Who the fuck has an emotional attachment against a metric system? The fucking Canadians?
I've seen people... I've literally seen people rail against Americans because how stupid they are for using this imperial system. It's just a cultural thing that we do. And, you know, yeah, is it the most efficient system in the world? No.
It's a bit xenophobic, and I think that's why people rail on people for it.
It's not xenophobic to use the imperial system.
Well, no. The defense of it is.
So we've talked about this before, and I think media has a big part to do with the slow uptake on the metric system.
Sure.
Imagine this. The nightly weather on the local news. They have the Fahrenheit temperature in big letters, and beside it in small font, they have the Celsius temperature.
Now, I think Fahrenheit's better than Celsius.
I don't either. I do not. I do not at all.
Why not?
Okay. So let me finish my point, because I like where this is going. I have something to say about that too. But if you every day on the news show people, like my weather apps on my phone don't even fucking do this, and it pisses me off. I want to see both temperatures side by side so I can get used to, because when you say it's 46 degrees out, I know exactly what 46 feels like. When you tell me it's 17 degrees Celsius, I have to stop and do some rough math in my head to figure out what 17 feels like.
It's the opposite for me. I've been living in a Celsius culture for so long. People tell me it's 50 degrees outside in Fahrenheit, and I'm like, what the fuck is that again?
Right. But you know, if my weather app on the phone, if on the nightly news on the TV, they showed both temperatures, you would build these bridges, these conversions, so you would more innately know what 27 degrees centigrade feels like.
Yeah.
And it's
I think that would be certainly reasonable for them to do.
It takes a year.
But I think we've had this argument before, but I think that Fahrenheit is a better system than Celsius because it has a finer granularity, and because particularly when you're talking about temperatures that we experience, it doesn't go into negative.
Well, that's it. It's made so most of the temperatures you experience are positive in two digits.
Right.
I mean, it was very arbitrarily made to be so.
It's arbitrary to argue that that's better.
I mean, I don't know if you know the origins of 0 degrees Fahrenheit, but it is...
It's an alcohol-water mixture
of a certain proportion. And basically, Mr. Fahrenheit felt, that's cold enough. Temperature doesn't go below that on our daily experience, so we don't have to deal with negative numbers. I mean, that's the reason it was created.
Basically.
And then 100 was his particularly hot wife. Her body temperature.
Yeah.
Her body temperature, for some reason, was at 100 degrees instead of 98.6.
And again, that is arbitrary. It's difficult.
It's horribly arbitrary.
It's difficult to communicate because it's based on variables, varying things. How much alcohol is in the water?
Wait.
Okay, so now I'm going to switch sides. The freezing point of water and the kilogram are the exact same fucking thing.
Exactly.
So, you know, just saying that, this is where I give every scientist wants to be able to count the number of atoms in a kilogram, but they can't, right? So there's an artifact that is a kilogram. And that's the same thing as 100 degrees or 0 degrees in Fahrenheit.
It's the same thing, but at least it's simpler to communicate.
Now, with 100 degrees and 0 degrees.
Why is it simpler to communicate?
It's not simpler to communicate for the realms of science where very minute and accurate numbers are required. It's simpler to communicate between cultures with people that have 10 fingers. Period.
Wrong, because the original system that we still use for time is sexagesimal. Why? Because the Babylonians originally counted with their knuckles and they counted to 12. So, and we still use that for time and degrees. So saying that we have 10 fingers.
I'm sorry, 10 fingers was a bit of a stretch. What I mean to relay by that 10 finger sort of allusion is that it's simply what everybody is using.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
We still use a sexagesimal system for time. The French tried to turn it into a decimal system, and it didn't work.
It's a common language.
Well, decimal clock's fucked up, right? Because
English is not an easy
language. It's not intuitive.
But it's the common language.
Yes.
The decimal clock's not intuitive. Hours are too long. Seconds are too short.
Right.
You know, it just, it's too far of a departure.
It's too far from what you're used to. But if you grew up in it, then it wouldn't be.
Sure. But
I'm actually just so surprised that we're even debating this. It just seems so ridiculous that one would even care that we would use the English system at all.
I care that people are saying that one is necessarily better than the other when they both are arbitrary.
The necessary better part is simply communication. That's it.
Yeah, but once you have an established communication, it's a lot easier to stay within that communication than to completely change it.
It's not that hard. Everybody in this country knows the metric system.
But that's not true.
They know what it is. They know basically
they know
how
what
it works.
Is, but they don't know how to convert miles.
They don't
per
know.
Hour
they don't know what it feels like, right? They don't.
Do you know how long it takes to adapt yourself to that? About a month at most. It's really simple.
I'm not arguing as being simple. I am.
It's really simple when you're
I am flip flopping here tonight because
You we're in an information age now. You got fucking your phone right in front of you that can tell you exactly how to translate these things, and you.
But we're the 99. We're the 1%. So. Mm-hmm. Or 3%.
Not only that, but your phone is either dealing with octets, or it's dealing with hex, or it's dealing with base 2.
Are you just talking about? But that's the shit that's under the hood.
Can I change topics here? I've gotten bored with this one. I want to tell you a little bit something about.
By all means,
yeah.
Let's please change
this. But it's still going to be decimal actually, or it's still digital. Okay. I was in Peru this week and or last week actually, and I went to a museum that is run by a Japanese researcher that's living there in Lima, and he has collected copious amounts of sort of Inca artifacts and whatnot, and he runs the museum, he owns all the stuff, and he ran me and my boss and these other and my two bosses actually through this museum. And if I had gone into the museum like you would any other museum and looked at these artifacts and read the captions, it would have been kind of like, oh, that looks pretty cool. But I had the guy who had researched them walk us through and explain all this stuff to us in Japanese, which was interesting. And he was really excited about it, like, because that's what he'd been researching for the best, like, 25 years. And he was going on about all these things that we understand about the artifacts and more so about the things that we don't understand, which is actually the cooler part. And one of the things that he got to that was really cool was this string. I don't know if you guys have ever heard about the communication system of the Incas, but they did not have a written language. They had a language that was decimal, digital. They communicated through numbers, and they did it by recording messages and information into strings. And they had these long strings, and they would tie ropes to them, and the ropes would be in knots, anywhere from 0 knots to 10 knots. And then it would start back at zero. And the strings were color coded, and then they would just tie a new knot for another letter of information, and everything was from 0 to 10. And they would carry messages between villages this way to inform people. And so when the Spanish came in the 1500s and took over that first village and conquered that first king, that information then traveled to the next village. And that's when the whole empire fell, because they knew, oh my God, these, what, 40 Spaniards have come in and taken out a village of thousands of people. Screw it, fuck, let's surrender. And so this sort of information society that had been able to share all this information through ropes fell the same way that we would.
Information society. I want to know.
Well, yeah, just like that. Yeah, but think of the way that, for example, the attacks on the World Trade Center affected an entire society just because everybody was able to read about it and hear about it overnight. Whereas that kind of attack, several decades earlier would have been completely different. It would have not affected so many countries, so many people, the way it affected it in an age where everybody could read about it so easily.
Well,
let's not get to that. I'm sorry, I'm going off topic. Let's go back to the Incas. So anyway, what he was getting on is that the way they exchanged information has never been decoded. The CIA and the KGB both thought this was a fascinating way to sort of codify information and run it by, and they all worked really hard to try to sort of decode the way that the Incas stored information, and nobody's ever been able to figure it out. I thought it was really fascinating. They had some of these ropes.
I remember reading or watching a documentary on the Mayans, and it was a similar situation. Nobody ever figured out their language because there was these pictographs, and it was just weird. Yeah. And finally this linguistic genius went down there and just spent a lot of time and finally figured it out.
Yeah.
And it was really weird because part of the problem was that the same words wouldn't necessarily look the same.
Right.
And it was all this combined picture graph system. And so when he finally sort of cracked the code, he sort of cracked it bit by bit, but he finally cracked the code. And so it was just one of the things where it really was a case of somebody needed to do a lot more lateral thinking, needed to think completely in a different way in order to understand it. And that's probably why the code hasn't been broken, because there hasn't been anybody down there who's been really just devoted his time to that and has enough lateral thinking to go
right
in that area. But it does remind me of things like, the Hebrew language was also numerical.
Right.
And it was, the amount of letters you use and what they added up to had meaning aside from just the word itself.
Of course. Yeah.
So it's actually, that tendency to mix language and numbers goes back to synesthesia. It's
purple.
Right. It's purple and it's shaped like a penis.
Right.
It's a big purple dildo. Should we end on big purple dildo?
Let me just say one last thing that was really cool. Have you ever seen the sort of beads that Native Americans and whatnot will put on, like a long, they're really small beads, and then they'll put like thousands of them on a long strand like this. He was showing us some of these Inca beads, and they're literally 1 millimeter. I'm going to use the metric system here. One millimeter in size, and then they have a hole through the center.
You mean 1/32nd of an inch?
Yeah, yes. About that. And then they have a hole through the center. And these things are made out of seashells. And he was going on about how our modern day milling machines and sort of machine tools basically simply cannot make holes that small in seashells. We can't do it. We could maybe get lucky one out of, 10, 15, 100 shells,
sure,
and get a hole that small. But they have like 10,000 of these things on a strand. And so somehow they would be able to do this by hand. The only way we would be able to do this with modern machinery right now is with lasers.
Mm-hmm.
And yet somehow they were making thousands of, they wore them all over the place.
Yeah, ancient people were just as smart as we are. They have technology or ways of doing things.
They didn't have Facebook, though.
they had ways of doing things that lost to time.
It's really interesting.
I'm sure that, if people were to spend a lot of time researching it, they could find out how they did it.
Right, maybe.
They didn't have magic, and they certainly didn't use lasers.
I'm not saying they had magic. It's just, it's interesting to think that, 2,000 years ago,
these people were just as smart as we are today.
Yeah, right. That's true. It's interesting, though. I mean, like, if we don't know how to do it with metal, I wonder what they were using.
That's the interesting thing is that, we evolution works in this Darwinian fashion, but culture is Lamarckian. Culture builds on what was there before.
Right.
So, we have the advantage of having all this past stuff. And then, of course, we think about how we did things based on this culture that we have.
Sure.
We can't think along the lines of how somebody would do it in a different culture.
Sure.
What type of different tools they would use, how they would do it.
That's what
obviously
makes it so
they
exciting.
Had a way. And it probably would be them, like, you use your doohickey and you should make a thingamabob.
Yeah.
It's simple. Just, what do you mean?
You just drink a bunch of IPA the night before and you pee, man. It gets so fun.
You don't need a fucking laser for it. You don't need to harness the power
you use
of quantum
this thing,
mechanics.
Duh.
it's a fucking toothpick.
Yeah. All right. Thank you guys for having me on tonight. I really appreciate it. It was, like I said, whenever I get to listen, I listen and I go, oh, I bet that's a delicious beer. It was really nice to actually hear you guys describe things in here that, you're not full of shit. You actually really know what you're talking about. It was a great experience for me. I wish that I could come here every other week. And even if not on the show, just sit there on the sidelines going, that's right. It was really fun. I really enjoyed it. I appreciate it a lot, guys.
Oh, thanks so much.
No problem. Thank you.
And
someone was talking to me this week, these MXL mics we got here.
Yeah.
We paid like $60 per mic. For another $50, I can replace some components in the circuitry and make them sound like a $500 mic. I'm not sure if it's worth the money.
I've never been,
especially since we're compressing it, you know, to an MP3, right? Yeah. I mean, we're not
I've never felt that the sound was anything to be left.
There's a modding community about these microphones, which I didn't know about. It's crazy.
Well, there's also geeks that talk about 20-sided die and make metal music about the Sumerian. So,
is it pink or is it orange?
Yes.
Pink.
I never knew what color was that far off.
Isn't it weird?
That is really pink. I'll have to look at them upstairs. Yeah. I thought these were good CF bulbs, but they might be fucking off all our color shit. The whole golden versus not golden versus amber. We're going to have to recall all our past like 3-year episodes.
Yeah. Every single podcast we did
was, through the past was tonight, 266, was it?
254.
Okay.
So next episode will be the last signed 8-bit integer episode we do.
Oh yeah, true enough. That's a computer thing. Don't worry about it.
全然わからなかったんです。すいません。
うるせえ ばかよ.
To the 8th.
Was that comprehensible at all?
ちょっとね。
No. Okay. That's what I learned from a Japanese guy in like 6th grade.
2 to the 8th goes from 0 to 255.
It's supposed to say shut up motherfucker, but yeah, I don't.
No, you did. I just didn't.
Okay.
It definitely had the motherfucker tone to it.
Okay.
Was, yeah.
I'll
let that go. They don't say that there. That's like.
Isn't it roughneck terminology? It's like.
They don't use dirty language the way we do.
Yeah, yeah.
They have it. They don't use it. Yeah. I was kind of like,
offended.
Oh, shit, he's really mad at me. I'm going to get the hell out of here.
Well, I'm happy that I can remember something that that Satoshi Endo taught me in 6th grade in middle school.
Yeah.
How to cuss in Japanese. I'm shocked that I remember the phrase.
I was ready to go for the door, to be honest.
That's awesome. It's awesome that he understood what I said.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't say that shit. They roll their R's and stuff like that, but that means they're ready to pull out a pistol if they got one.
Yeah. All right, excellent. That's about it, I guess, huh?
All right, talk to you soon.